How do you overcome adversity? Well, I think that challenges are great in life. Without challenges, there's no growth. And our next guest on the Attitude series has definitely been through challenges in her life, and she's overcome them. And it's probably an episode where, as she says, she's unapologetically herself. So we're excited to have her on the show. Her name is Sully Litchfield, and I hope that you guys really enjoy this session. So sit back, listen, and enjoy listening to Sully and just how she has blossomed from where she came from to where she's at today. Thanks for listening in. Okay, hello, my name is Jared, and I am the host of the Attitude Series podcast. And it's right now, it's 2019. We've just kicked off. We've had a couple great guests on from late last year. And this year, kicking off for 2019, we've got our first guest for 2019. You know what? I'd like to sit here and say, you know, this lady's got lots of accolades. But what I want to do is I've known her for quite a few years now. And she is a wonderful, wonderful person. Just to give you some stuff about her, she is a mom. She's a very proud mom. She's also she's a stepmother to two other children as well. And she's a wife. She works full-time in the health industry, health and fitness industry. And not only is she a running coach, she's also a personal trainer, and she's a nutritionist, a very good friend. And we're super happy to have her on board. We've got some great information that we want to cover with her today, but please welcome Sully Litchfield.
Thanks, Jared. Hey, best intro ever.
Best intro ever. And, you know, we'll probably talk a little bit about, you know, some of the stuff that doesn't define Sully, but Sully is also a top-ranked athlete. Before we got started here, I got a little bit of a giggle going because we were talking about some of the marathons that Sully had has done. She's done over 18 marathons. She's done four at least ultra marathons, 50 kilometer, and she's also run a 100 kilometer marathon, which we went, you know, couples went to New Zealand to run Tarawera, and she hadn't trained. She didn't even train for it, and she still smoked me in 100Ks by at least 2.5 hours. So
trained a little bit.
trained a little bit. But super happy to have you here, Sully. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. How's your day been, by the way?
It's been good. I've been, had some PT clients this morning, went for a run, went to work, and now I'm here.
Awesome. 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 Well, what I'd like to do just to kick off with the series today and just to talk a little bit more is let's take it back to the beginning. Let's take it all back. Because what a lot of people see is a lot of people see Sully and they see either on Facebook or they know you through Instagram or through, because you're super popular at events and running and all that. But take it, if we go back to a little bit talking about childhood and where you grew up, where did Sully grow up? And just tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm actually a Sydney girl. So I go for the Blues, which has probably just made 10 million people switch. I'm born and bred in Sydney. In actually North Sydney, Neutral Bay area. So a very affluent, yuppie, North Shore girl kind of scenario. But my childhood was far from that. We didn't grow up with a lot of money at all. One of five kids, I'm the baby. Four girls and a boy.
Wow.
I lived in the same rundown little home in a very, very well-off area for my first 19 years before I moved away. Beautiful place to grow up, super spoiled by opportunity, even though it was tough in terms of my parents had no money and, you know, that was a big challenge. I was still really fortunate to have many, many opportunities afforded to me. Yeah.
Right. And being the baby, tell me about being the baby. Like what was the difference in age between the five of you?
So there's 10 years between me and my elder sister, so which is, you know, fairly jam-packed. I do think I was a mistake. I was about 4 years after the last one. So the rest of them are all quite close in age. And then there's a four-year gap between my sister Gunavir and I. Almost 4 years. Yeah, so it's sort of me, then 3.5, 4 years later her, and then the rest of them are all quite close, within sort of 1 to 2 years of each other.
How much love, now when I say this, how much love's in the family? I know I've got three other siblings myself, mm-hmm. and we're all 2 years apart, and I know as kids we probably didn't get on that well, and it wasn't until later on in life that we actually started to bond and actually be able to say I love you.
Yeah. You know?
Was there a lot of love in your household?
Look, my siblings and I, we would actually do anything for each other, I believe. We are all very strong personalities. We're all very different. But at the end of the day, I think no matter, even if we hadn't spoken for 2 years, I think we would do anything for one another. There is a really strong underlying sense of loyalty and love. We're not an affectionate family. We're not the type of family that flatter each other a lot or pump each other's tires. We didn't grow up in that kind of environment. It was almost like a self-deprecating kind of environment in many ways. But because my parents didn't have a good marriage, I think, you know, even though we fought like cats and dogs when we were kids, you know, there was that sense of like we need each other, we'll rally together to go get through hard times. And, you know, we have been through hard times as a family, but also in our own individual journeys and lives. And we certainly have been there for each other when it's counted. We've had, all of us at different points have had times where we've struggled in the relationships, and even years where we've probably not spoken well. Or very much at all, but we always come back to each other. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Mm. So when you talk about hard times, was it in terms of financial hard times, or was it in terms of the family? You know, just the initial relatives. I mean, how?
My parents didn't have, you know, they didn't have a good marriage in for many reasons. Like financially, yes, they were under a lot of pressure. In the 80s, you know, interest rates were terrible for homes, and my dad was a lot older than my mum, like 25 years older than my mum.
Okay.
He was 61 when I was born. So by the time I came along, he was kind of getting close to retiring and just doing casual teaching. He had been a professor at Sydney Uni, and very academic parents. You know, my mum was a teacher as well, and that's sort of how they met. But, you know, the age difference, I certainly think, played havoc to their relationship. And my mum grew to sort of resent him and was quite bitter. And there was a lot of fighting, a lot of unhappiness. But because there was no money, mum had to go back and work. She got five children. You know, that creates a whole other element of stress.
Right. Mm. Absolutely. And I know too, and hearing some of those similarities, it's challenging. It's challenging for kids in particular, because they don't know how to deal with that. You know, mom and dad are doing their thing. I mean, I grew up in that household where mom and dad did fight, and things happened because of financial reasons and all that. And it was always easy to go run off to the, I didn't have any strategies myself, but in terms of some of your strategies being, you know, if your dad was 61 when you were born, wow, what were some of the strategies that you dealt with in terms of how did you overcome getting through some of these moments?
I didn't do very well through primary school. I was quite rebellious, and I played out a fair bit, because I guess my siblings had some years before the fighting got really bad, and by the time I was born, there was no sort of childcare afforded to me, so I was home and right until I went to primary school, and home with my mum and dad, just fighting every single day and kind of pretty crazy verbal abuse and all sorts of other things that any 3-year-old should not witness.
Right.
And it was every day. So I think by the time I got to primary school, I really was not equipped. One, I hadn't socialized with other kids. I hadn't gone and done that sort of pre-prep type thing that we encourage our children to do today. I had no socializing skills. And two, my normalcy of like two adults interacting was, just aggressive. Like all I remember really outside of that was, you know, my mum's hostility toward my dad and just how much she hated him. And so I was quite scared of her, and my dad was the more calm one. So it was sort of like different to what we often think that in that sort of situation, it's going to be the male that's going to be more violent or aggressive. But for me, it was the other way around. So I took a little bit of solitude and solace, I guess, with my father, and I found him comforting and safe. But my relationship with him wasn't encouraged because my mum really ruled the roost. She had the power, she had the influence. And so the older I got, the harder it was to be close to my dad. And it was almost, it was encouraged to treat him poorly. And so my other siblings, they had that as well. But because I had those initial years on my own at home, and then they all left home as soon as they finished high school, and then I had my last years of high school at home alone again, still with my parents living at opposite ends, my experience of it was different to theirs. We've all got our own story within the same family.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've learned over the years is this is my perception and this is my reality, but some of my siblings would listen in and be like, well, that wasn't exactly the same for me. And that's okay, we lived different journeys within the same family to an extent. But I acted out, but thankfully I loved little athletics. So I think, and my dad took me to athletics, and that was one of the things that got me through and stopped me from being too much of a rat bag.
Yeah.
I could beat all the boys, and I did really well as like a runner and cross country through primary school. And I played piano and violin. I came from a very musical family. My mum did sacrifice, even though she was quite an, I don't like using the word aggressive, but that, that's how it felt and that's what it was for me. She was very self-sacrificial. She didn't say I love you, but she put every single penny she earned into giving us opportunities, and that was her way of saying I love you. And so we did ballet, we did, piano, violin, and running, and so I had a lot of extracurricular stuff going on, and that was a massive godsend. But by the time I got to high school, I had really low self-esteem, very lost in myself, tended to gravitate toward the wrong type of people, and I really struggled to find friends and find my place in high school. And I think the thing that got me through and changed me in that chapter of life was I actually joined a church, believe it or not, and I went to a youth group. One of my sisters went and invited me along, and that completely changed my life. So I'm not involved in that so much anymore, but I'm so grateful for it.
Do you think it was the people there?
Yeah.
And by the way, thanks for sharing all that.
I mean,
it's all good. So do you think it was the, because I'd like to touch upon that point for a second. Do you think it was the people there, or was it the message that was being delivered, or did it just feel like a different environment where you felt maybe protected, or you felt like you had a tribe?
All of the above. I think, I went to this youth group, and there were people, the leaders there were in their early 20s, and so accepting, non-judgmental, and made me feel really safe, and that I could open up about my family without the fear of judgment, because through school, I didn't want anyone to know what went on at home. I was really ashamed. I was ashamed of my dad's age. I was, I lived in constant fear of judgment and not being good enough. And because we grew up in a family where, you know, it wasn't like, I love you, I'm proud of you, good job. It was always, I've always felt like I wasn't enough, had to push harder. And I always compared myself to my siblings who were incredibly academic and very talented. And I never thought I lived up to scratch. I just had this terrible self-deprecation kind of going on, I guess.
Where did that stem from?
I think that just goes right back to the beginning of what I witnessed, and just not getting those basic fundamentals that every child needs of feeling safe and feeling loved, and just those words, I love you, you are enough, good job, I'm proud of you, not hearing them, even though I'm sure both parents thought them and felt them. They were so caught up in their own internal struggles, financially, marriage, that wasn't communicated. So I think if you don't get that from a very young age, you're trying to just find your own sense of self and security. And yeah, and you're too young. You don't have that abstract thinking.
It's tough, isn't it? I'm sitting here, I was thinking earlier, you know, when, like they say, like a child's brain is 50% developed by age 4.
Yeah.
And like 80% developed by age 10.
Yeah.
So most of this development's all happening at such an early age that your behaviors and everything are really printed right there on the map, the map itself.
Yeah.
And what you were saying earlier, saying that, you know, maybe your mom, you were probably a little fearful of mom, but dad, you were more attracted to him because he was there to help or assist or all that. You know, interesting, you know, one of the things that you had told me earlier is that you lost your dad when you were 19.
Yes. Yeah.
And how did that affect you, knowing that you probably had a strong bond with him at that point?
Yeah, it was really hard because through my adolescence, I really pushed my dad away, because that's what we were modeled as children, and that's what we were, I guess, encouraged more than anything to do. Having a strong, close relationship with my dad really wasn't an option if you wanted to stay under that roof.
Right.
And so when Dad passed away, there was a lot of sense of, I felt responsible in some ways, and I felt like I, you know, so much regret, so much, if only I'd been stronger, you know, stood up for what I really felt should have been communicated to him, if only I hadn't been so hard to him. But one thing I remember is he said to me one day, like, I know you love me, like, it's okay, I know. And I'll never forget him saying that, because I guess those words, because for at least 10 years after he died, I struggled a lot with, you know, so much I was coming to terms with it for so long, and I would remember those words every so often, and that got me through a lot. But also there were people in my life, particularly from the youth group, that met my dad and knew of more of what I experienced at home, who reassured me and had more maturity than me, had more life experience than me, and helped, you know, helped me see that this wasn't my fault. I was just a kid, you know, it's hard.
That's a tremendous amount of pressure to put on a young one.
Yeah. And I grew up very quickly because my dad actually had a mental illness. So he, in some ways I felt like I lost him before I lost him. So my year 11 and 12 of high school, my dad had been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, and I had become the object of his obsession. I was the only child living at home, and mum lived at one end, he lived at the other. You know, and he had to fend for himself. Mum didn't cook him food. He really wasn't allowed to be a part of our family unit. And, you know, that was my normalcy. At Christmas, he had to stand in a corner. And by a certain year, he wasn't even allowed to stand in a corner and be a part of it. It was just, but that was the way it was.
What were you doing during this? You were wanting to jump in and help out? Were you just...
I think I was too dictated by fear. You don't know any different, and that's what you're modeled. And I think you just know inside, like, that there's nothing you can really do to change the way things are. Being the youngest too, you don't have a strong voice.
What were the other siblings doing during this time?
My elder sister was very close to my mum, and she really modelled my mum's sort of behaviour and followed her and was quite protective of my mum. My brother sort of is the next one down, and I think he just sort of, being the guy, got away with floating and not being as involved to some extent. And then my sisters, like my middle sister, really struggled because she was a little bit like me and had a strong relationship with my dad. But she stood up to my mum more, and she had more of a fallout with my mum as a consequence. And then my sister Guinevere, I think she struggled. She was a little bit more like myself and sort of took a lot of the negative emotion of what we were going through, what we were living through, what we were experiencing, and projected that onto my dad, because he just took it. He would let us yell at him. He would let us put it on him and didn't really push back. Wow. And in hindsight, I think, before he, got really unwell, I think he just probably knew that it wasn't, we didn't mean it. Like, it was just coping, and I'm sure he had the intelligence to understand that there was a lot of frustration, and he just received, which, I beat myself up for years about some of the things I would say to him and the way I'd push him away and yell and project all that, like, emotion, because I didn't know where else to project it. I didn't know what else to do with it. But unfortunately for him, he copped a lot of it.
Wow. And moving beyond that, say we've just, when did you finally leave the Sydney area? When did you break loose as Miss Independent? And
pretty early.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I worked really hard through, I turned my life around a lot in high school, worked really hard, and actually realized I did have a brain and that I could apply myself and do well in my studies as well. And I worked really hard to actually get into College of Fine Arts, which is like a division of New South Wales Uni. I was quite good at art, and I wanted to do something with art. I thought, I wanted to be an artist, but like, how do you, that's a tough gig. It's like trying to become a runner, isn't it? But even harder. but so I thought I'd go with graphic design, yep. Interior design, because I loved that. So worked really hard, got into that. And then things with my dad were tough, so I decided to defer for 12 months and stay at home for one more year after school. And he was in and out of like a psychogeriatric ward, and school finished and I was a bit messed up. So I just went and worked full time in a jewellery store. But by that time I was actually dating one of the youth ministers from the church.
Right.
Yes.
So I like how you said, from the church.
From the church. So this is one thing that not very many people know about me. And I would say up until about 2 years ago, I kept as a big secret because I was so ashamed of this part of my life, because I married him when I was 19. So he was my first love, and he, is a great man. And he knew me from when I was about 15 and was my friend, and knew my dad, and actually went to school with my brother, coincidentally.
Yeah.
I guess you look back and you think, gosh, classic example of young girl. He was almost 8 years older than me, made me feel safe, secure, and loved, and like, let's run away, get married, and you know, everything will be fine. Completely naive. And we did sort of run away, not really, but he got a job up in a place called McLean near Yamba,
right,
Northern New South Wales, and we decided to take that job. And so I never ended up going to COFA. I went and did a distance ed degree instead in environmental science, so I could move away. And I married him when I was 19, and 5 weeks later my dad died. So the last day I saw my dad was my wedding day to him. And then we'd moved from Sydney, and I had this really gnawing, nagging feeling that something wasn't right with Dad. He was by this stage on his own in Sydney, and my mum had parted ways and moved to the Blue Mountains.
Yep.
And I just felt like something wasn't right. And I rang him, and a couple of weeks after I got married, and said, right, I'm going to come down to Sydney. And I called one of my sisters, said, I'm going to come down. I feel like I need to see Dad. And I'd organized it for a couple of weeks, but he died in the middle week before I'd got down there. So that was, you know, pretty full on. And I just got married. I was only just 19. Moved away from all my family, all my friends. And then I went through this massive, like, grieving sort of period without a lot of emotional intelligence, without a lot of maturity. I say I grew up fast, but I also think I was still such a kid, and there was a kid in me that never grew up. So, you know, I had no coping strategies or mechanisms to deal with some of the stuff that came up for me. Started seeing a counsellor, you know, and Mike was great, but I just didn't know how to manage being in a relationship and going through all that stuff. And
it sounds like a whole lot to take on board. And at the same time, I mean, your secret's out now.
Yeah.
Your secret's out now. But, yeah. So, you know, somebody like being 19 and your husband, I would think that he was doing his best by you to be able to help you get through.
Yeah.
And understand what was going on at the same time.
Yeah.
He was your backbone at that point.
He was. I mean, he struggled, you know, to know how to best support me. And, you know, ultimately I pushed him away and just was like, I can't do this. As soon as it felt tough, I was like, oh, I don't know how to deal with us being not in a good space. Like, that means we're over. Like,
right.
No understanding that relationships can go through really hard times and that you actually can work through that and come out the other side. My understanding was, you have an argument, oh, I'm going to end up like my mom and dad. So I...
Because that's your experience,
yeah,
right? That's, you know, yeah, you see that happen, you see that it's too tough, I'm out of here.
Yeah, so I ran.
I ran, and
he sort of, like, in a way, waited for me to sort my shit out for about a year. And it took me a bit longer than that. So by the time I came back around and was like, oh, hey, I'm really sorry, I actually still really love you, he'd moved on. Fair enough, too. But we remained, he never blamed me. He was actually very forgiving and understanding. A lot of other people blamed me, a massive falling out and away from the church. And that was, you know, really hard. But
sounds like a rare experience, though.
Mm, yeah.
19, going through that, losing a parent, losing your father, all those circumstances piling up.
Yeah, yeah, it was just a classic example of, like, a girl in her early 20s just having no idea who she is and doing everything the hard way. You know.
So at that stage in your life, where was your outlet? What was Sully doing to help Sully?
At that stage, I was working in hospitality. I had stopped doing my degree. I discovered alcohol. So I was probably drinking a bit too much, working. And, sleeping around a little bit, doing all those terrible things that you do when you're in your early 20s. Very lost. And then I, I had a really bad experience with a couple of guys one night when I was drunk, got completely taken advantage of, and it threw me for six. Like, I just, essentially just,
Was that a moment where you just said, enough's enough, I got to do something about it, this is the moment where I need to create some new strategies, I need to figure out where my next chapter lies?
Yeah, I came very close to just taking my own life. Like, I was so dark and so depressed, particularly after that happened.
Listen up, if you were just getting into that episode, part two will be out in the next couple days, so stay tuned. But that was Sully Litchfield, and if you want to see the full film version on YouTube, you can check that out too. We'll have that out in the next couple days as well. Thanks very much. Hope you guys are picking up some kernels from that. And once again, if you like what you hear on the Attitude Series, make sure that you put some comments, share, subscribe, let other friends know. My name is Jared. I'm your Attitude Coach, and thanks again for listening to the Attitude Series.